Today, probably myths versus reality as financial pressures still build. Hello again, it's Martin Noth from Digital Finance Analytics, one that is Post, covering finance and property news. Today, what I want to do is to paint a picture of where we currently are with regard to the property market across Australia, and also share some of my latest analysis ahead of a live show, which we're going to run on Tuesday, where we can go into further detail too. Now, I think a good place to start is this article from Elizabeth Knight. And she says that there's a concerning tenor of the mass anti-immigration rallies over the weekend. One is bleeding into the mainstream debate on housing. And she calls it a nasty collision of hate and housing. Well, it's clear to me that the question of migration and demand on housing are linked, despite the fact that many people want to disconnect it. But of course, there are also other factors in play, as this article highlights, including a further rise in house prices and an increase in the pace of gains in August will only stoke the fire on rising prices. And she argues that it perhaps will ignore some of the positive aspects of immigration, but for those trying to get a foothold into the housing market, watching prices rise while immigrants from other countries buying into their street is tangible evidence of where the blame lies. Well, could well be. And it's interesting that the New South Wales Planning Minister Paul Scully accused opponents of new developments in Sydney of helping to create suburbs without grandchildren and the key workers needed to support an ageing population. Now, of course, the government has been active around housing. Well, at least they're talking a lot about it and pushing for increased supply and more residential construction, but it's not progressing very quickly. And as a result, we have the fear of missing out, FOMO. And so Elizabeth concludes her article by saying that FOMO, the fear of missing out, is in full swing. Now, 2 points. The first is there is clearly a connection in terms of demand and migration, and we can't walk away from that. And I've argued for some time that the right answer is to bring migration and housing construction more into line, which means temporarily dialing back more migration. But more importantly, there is the question of those people in the country and trying to grab property. And there, the conversation is equally complex. But if we then turn to the latest articles, this one from the AFR, saying that about three quarters of homes on the auction block have found new owners as the appetite for cashed-up buyers proves more than a match for the traditional surge in spring listings, according to the preliminary auction clearance rates. The initial success rate is 75% for the fourth straight week, they say, and that's the preliminary clearance, of course, across the nation's capitals provided by Cotality. Domain also publishes their own results, and they're saying Sydney 75.6 compared with Melbourne's 72.6 and nationally 73.2. But let me stress again, this is massively misleading because they only take account of the numbers reported sold, 447, compared with the reported auctions at 591, rather than comparing the number sold with the number listed, which will be 966. And if you run that calculation, then the numbers will be a lot lower. So this is an artificial furphy, which just keeps giving. Now, going back to what the AFR said, they said that total listings were 2,157 properties. That's a third week in a row in which more than 2,000 auctions were held. And next week, Cotality Research Director Tim Lawless says we're going to see an even higher number, 2,440, climbing to 2,600 the week after. And then the article goes on to sheet it back to the three rate cuts and a fourth expected. And of course, the upcoming impetus in the federal government's decision to bring forward by 3 months to October the government-backed deposit scheme to help first home buyers get in the market. And in detail, the preliminary clearance, according to Catality, was 78%, and in Melbourne, 73.2%. So there's a significant difference between what they are saying there and what Domain's saying. And Louis Christopher's quoted in this article too, it's a buyer's market. We found a combination of more sellers and more buyers. We're entering an upswing, and it's going to get stronger from here. And that is the view that is being pushed out left, right, and centre. And many buyers are buying it and literally going off to chase properties. Now, it may well be right for some people to buy, but of course, a little bit of caution might be worth sheeting as well, simply because at the moment, prices are not necessarily reflecting true or fair value. And as I've discussed with Edwin, and we will again on a Monday rant, there are things afoot with regard to the way that the agents are pushing the agenda too. Now, if we take the conversation a little bit further, this article is quite interesting. This is from the Fin Review again. Housing pain looms this spring as first home buyers fight investors. And this article talks about that Andy Florence, the founder and chief executive co-star and the new owner of property classifieds giant Domain, spent last weekend taking in the ultimate battleground of Australia's housing sector, the Saturday auction. And he was struck by the sheer drama of those events where comedy and tragedy often play out in front of the world and their neighbours. We don't have any equivalent of that in the US, he said. At one auction, Florence and his team watched. There were even real tears as an investor outbid a would-be owner-occupier. And sadly, the article says that scene may become common across Australia in the next few months as the pivotal spring selling season goes into overdrive. And in the same article, they quote Nicola Powell, the chief of research at Domain, who's predicting the market in the next few months will be hot as the battle between owner-occupiers, including those poor first home buyers, and investors go into overdrive. Interest rates are a big factor, Powell says, and that could effectively make it more affordable. Maybe. On our latest numbers, the cut in rates will improve affordability by about $30,000. But of course, prices will rise, particularly perhaps in Sydney and Melbourne, eroding any of the affordability benefits of the rate cuts within just a few months. So what's going on? The article says, well, clearly underlying demand is still strong and has just been turbocharged by rate cuts. For proof, look at clearance rates, they say, which are running at over 70% before the spring selling season starts. And then the article goes on to talk about, again, the government's first home buyers scheme, which effectively means buyers with a 5% deposit can get a loan without mortgage insurance, is now uncapped, having previously been limited to 35,000 places. In fact, this is so important, I'm going to run a few special shows over September where I get some of my guests to talk about their view as to what this move really means, because I think it is deceiving and misleading, and many first-time buyers risk getting trapped because of the decisions they might be persuaded to make. Just going back to the article, Powell also says investors are falling back into the market, particularly in Sydney. Investors tend to react even before a cash rate cut is delivered, and that's exactly what we're seeing, Powell told the Financial Review Property Summit on Tuesday. Investors chase capital growth. They're not sparked by gross rental yields, and particularly in a market like Sydney, what we have got is a rising investor segment, and then at the same time, a first-time buyer incentive coming into the market, and investors and first-home buyers are going to compete for similar-priced properties, she added. It's a classic vicious cycle problem. A rate cut improves affordability but also stimulates demand, and because supply is so weak, prices get squeezed higher and higher, luring more investors in and pushing out first-home buyers. And In this article, they also quote the ANZ chief economist. This is a 40-year housing affordability problem we've created, and we're trying to solve it with a small shift in the delta of housing supply. It's a small shift. We're trying to build around 220,000 homes a year. That's a 1% of the crisis. And of course, we don't have people to build them anyway. So what with NIMBYs and changes to the National Construction Code, it's not enough. The skilled workers simply aren't there to fulfill demand. But there's another part of this as well, and that is that maybe the expectation of rate cuts are a bit overdone. This article here from Shane Wright makes the point the Reserve Bank cautioned there may not be as many more interest rate cuts to come for stretched home buyers, as news figures show shoppers are opening their wallets on clothes, holidays and cafe meals. The markets have dialed back their expectations of rate cuts, maybe down to 3.1%, maybe not as low as that. And it all depends on what consumers do. And this article makes the point that Treasurer Jim Chalmers said the figures shows a substantial pickup in growth, noting that GDP was running equal or faster than every other major developed nation, which suggests that maybe the economy is not so downcast, which means that rate cuts might not be required as much. And on the other hand, Shadow Treasurer Ted O'Brien says the numbers showing the economy was certainly not out of the wood yet, and that Australians still felt the cost of living pain. Well, I see that in my survey. Now, I made a show about this the other day, talking specifically about are consumers confident or constrained? And of course, the truth is we have both. We have some households who are doing very well and are perhaps thinking of investing in property, etc., etc. There are others that are very constrained. And unfortunately, those in the rental sector and those with mortgages are certainly feeling the pain, as we'll see in my surveys in a second. I covered this also with my conversation with Tarek Brooker a couple of days ago. Is Australia approaching terminal decline? And there we went into this in some detail and talked about the data and how the data deceives rather than helps. And that's really the point. So for many people, they'll just pick the headlines up and run with them. And that will stoke then FOMO. That will stoke interest in crowding into property. And for some, it might be the right decision, but for many, the decision may well be the wrong decision. Again, I'll be talking about this in future posts and trying to lay some foundations out as to which people will benefit and which people won't. But the bottom line is most of the people, most of those first-time buyers who will benefit from the government's change will be those who are going to buy anyway. It does very little for the true cohorts that are struggling with affordability and trapped in the rental sector. That is the truth. And if you want to understand that and why I'm saying that, then we need to talk about my surveys. Of course, I continue to survey my households on an ongoing basis. We run the rolling surveys. And each month, we slice and dice the data, and we then present it here. And we can also form a view of where prices are going to go as well, looking at our scenarios. And those scenarios are pretty important because, of course, the scenarios are useful in terms of thinking about how things like mortgage stress, the price trajectory, the buying and selling intentions, the migration data, the CPI and economic data all feed in to the economic model and the economy. And then it runs into the scenarios. And we can look at those scenarios at the postcode level and roll up at a regional, state and all Australia level. At this point, I will just remind you that I do provide a one-to-one service. If you want a detailed conversation about a particular suburb, you can have an individual conversation with me. We can look at specific data. This is not financial advice, but I can look at the information down to the postcode level or a suburb level and look at underlying trends. So I can look at stress, home price, trend data, and also look at the modelling. This takes about an hour for a conversation, either via Zoom or phone. And there's a cost involved because there's a lot of research that I have to do. If you're interested, contact me by the blog. Contact details are below. I'm booking 3 to 5 weeks ahead at the moment because we've got quite a few people who are trying to navigate this rather uncertain time. And I will make the point that this data because it's very current, it's updated every month, gives a pretty good indication of where we actually are, but also a bit of a sense of where we might be going ahead based on the scenarios. Now, as I go into my modelling, one of the things I look at is financial stress. And it's interesting and important to understand how we define stress. There are many definitions out there, from 30% of income or taxable income, or some people use underwriting metrics, but we define stress in cash flow terms. If households have more outgoings, and I exclude one-off discretionary items there like holidays, than income, we define them as stressed. If they have a mortgage, they're in mortgage stress. If renting, they're in rental stress. We can look at investors as well with cash flow pressures. And we can also aggregate the data and look at the total financial stress down at a postcode level. We can express it in percentage terms, percentage of households, and also the count of households. Latter is probably a better view. The RBA published this rather interesting and important chart some time ago, talking about the spectrum of household financial stress. And it starts in the mild end with budget pressures, can morph through to missing payments, and ultimately moving to insolvency. Now, insolvency is relatively low at the moment, but the banks are being quite helpful with people who are struggling, restructuring their debt. But I measure stress at this mild end, at the budget pressure end, because that is the underlying symptom. But it can take several years to morph from mild through to severe, sometimes 3 to 5 years. Now, if I look at the data for August, this is the latest information on rental stress. You can see here that rental stress is sitting at 74.7% of households renting have cash flow pressures. Dropped very slightly. That's because incomes have risen slightly, particularly for low paid workers in recent times. But on the other hand, rents are still rising and other costs of living are still rising. So it's still 74.7%. Three quarters of those in the rental sector have cash flow pressures. Mortgage stress actually rose again this month. It was just below 50% last month, but it's now at 51.1% this time. That is because we are seeing some people piling into the market. We're also seeing cost of living continue to rise, and the interest rate cuts aren't necessarily translating through yet to reducing mortgage repayments. In some cases, households are choosing to make those payments. But in others, it's a matter of timing. But the critical issue here is that other costs of living are rising significantly higher. I don't think the CPI fully represents the cost of living, particularly for mortgage holders. And by the way, the debt to income ratio with the RBA still is pretty high. It's come back very slightly, but it is still higher than it was some years ago. If we look at the data then for August across the states, you can see there that where I've coloured it in yellow, the percentages have gone up. So mortgage stress is up in the ACT, New South Wales, Queensland, Tasmania, Victoria, and Western Australia. And 51.1% is the grand total. That's 1.9 million households in mortgage stress of around the 10 million households out there. Rental stress rose in the ACT, the Northern Territories, Queensland, Tasmania, and Western Australia, and was 74.7%, slightly lower than last month, but that's still 2.3 million households in rental stress. Investor stress came down slightly. That's because the interest rate cuts are actually making the payments from investors drop slightly. Nevertheless, the management fees are still rising. And the other costs of maintaining properties for investment purposes are still there, including some of the new regulations coming in with things like fire alarms and other requirements. And overall financial stress, which is the aggregate level, shows that in the ACT, in New South Wales, in Queensland, in Tasmania, in Victoria and Western Australia, and overall financial stress rose. And we have 47.6% of households in financial stress, which is 4.7 million households across the country, which is a significant and worrying number. Now, we can also look at the data another way. This is based on the different segments, our cohorts. And here, young-growing families, including first-time buyers, are still at the top of the list in terms of the percentage in mortgage stress at 90%. That's more than 292,000 households in that segment. We have rental stress still raging away. And I note again that multicultural establishment, the first generation migrants at 84.8%, are the most stressed. So we are seeing again more people coming into the country, going into rental property, and getting into financial difficulty quite quickly. From a stressed investor perspective, not surprisingly, perhaps more affluent households are actually more stressed because they have a greater share of investment properties. The exclusive professionals there, and young affluents as well, they have multiple investment properties, but some of them are underwater from a cash flow perspective. And that means, of course, that some of them are still thinking of selling, particularly in Melbourne, actually, where the investment property market is still looking pretty sick. And overall, the average financial stress there, well, it's touching pretty much all cohorts across the country, but it's the young growing families at 68.4% that actually have the greatest proportion. And that's more than 500,000 young growing families have cash flow problems, which is extremely concerning, given that that is a large proportion of people in this cohort. And finally, a quick mention about our scenarios. We, of course, look at different ways of exploring the futures. These are not predictions. These are sensitivities. None of these may be right, but we have three. The first one is we get the rate cuts coming through to December. The base case is a soft landing where we see that rates hang around a bit where they are because of the fact that inflation is still a bit sticky and it may well stay above target until 2026, but we don't get a recession in Australia. And here, migration does begin to ease back a little bit, whereas in the best case scenario, we have very strong migration, which is what we have at the moment, by the way. Worst case scenario is that we still see rates sticky, but then because of the second order impacts from the trade issues and because of the financial pressure more broadly, we move into a recession in Australia. We do get further rate cuts, but it's a bit too late and migration drops below average. So those are the three we use. And if we then overlay those aggregate level across Australia, our scenarios are that in the best case scenario, houses will still be significantly higher over the next 3 years, including which an aggregate 13.3% over 3 years. In the base case, there is a bit of a sideways move or a very small fall. And the worst case, a significant fall. Units tend to follow on in somewhat similar fashion, but don't tend necessarily to fall as far in our worst case scenarios. Now, on Tuesday, I'm going to be able to look in detail at the information at a postcode level. And in fact, you can get information at a postcode level. Now, if you have a particular postcode you'd like me to cover on Tuesday, put it in the chat, because that means that I can do the research before the show. And if I do that, I can share two slices of information. The first slice of information relates to the summary from my core market model. This is for North Ryde. And you can see here that in North Ryde, we have about 11,000 households with 29% borrowing and 48% renting. We can see that rental stress is very high and mortgage stress is not too bad. And we can also see that houses are around 34% of the properties in the area, but units are 54.6%. Gross investment yield is positive at 3.4%. That's the price relative to the rental, but the net investment yield, which is after all the costs, is negative. And we can also look at taxable income and those sorts of things and look at debt servicing. You can see there that disposable monthly income is around $7,000 and 43% going on the typical mortgage and 33% going on the typical rent. Now, we can also look at the scenarios as well, and we can project what prices may do ahead. But the other thing we can do, if in fact you decide to put your request in early, is that we can also share information about price moves over the last 10 years. So this is North Ryde units. And this is quite an interesting chart insofar that it shows that back in August 2016, the average unit price in North Ryde was $879,000. Now in August 2025, it's lower at $804,000. So on average, over the last 10 years, prices are lower. So you can see that in fact, prices moved down in 2017, 2019, 2022 and 2025, but they rose in 2018, 2020, 2021, and 2024. But the net journey is the average unit is now lower than it was in 2016. And just remember that this is not inflation adjusted. So if you were to overlay inflation, then the loss would be significantly worse. Now, in comparison, houses in the same postcode have had a different journey. So in 2016, it was an average of $1.45 million. In 2025, it's $2.46 million, which shows you that there's considerable difference between houses and units. And to me, this is an important story. You have to go granular. It's really important just not to look at aggregate data or average data. You need to actually go into detail, and that is what we can do. Now, if you decide that you'd like to join the show live, I can still give you data on the particular extract from my core market model, but I won't be able to give you the price moves. Whereas if you put the request in beforehand, then I can probably populate the additional information. That's because I have to run extra queries on the database, and that isn't done in real time. So what am I saying out of all this? Well, the takeaway for today is that there is a disconnect between the spruiking that we see from the journos and the talk about prices rising and everything. Even they admit affordability is under pressure. And the reality for many people that they're still finding that the costs of living are still rising, the costs of housing is still going up, and they're having to make very, very hard financial decisions. So why aren't we getting more on this latter story in the mainstream media? That is my key question. And I think it's because they actually believe there are more clicks on the house prices are going up, buy, buy, buy story, rather than house prices are actually under pressure because households are under pressure. And they tend to underreport consistently the pressure on the rental sector, which to me is actually the leading indicator of the failure of housing policy in Australia. When you think that 75% of those renting have problems, have cash flow problems, and I see it in my surveys and my one-to-ones, a lot of people are still confronted with additional rent rises. And as I discussed with Tarek, actually, there's a disconnect between the official information that's published and reality. So there is this gap between the myth of what's going on in property and the reality. And my passing thought is this: if you are going to make decisions on buying property or selling property or whatever, make sure you base it on firm data and not on the mythology. Don't get caught up in the rush to buy without doing your homework. And to that extent, DFA can help in terms of providing information. And also listen to Edwin and I on the Monday rant, where we go into this in way more detail and talk specifically about the dynamics of estate agents who actually, from a real estate perspective, are part of the problem. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.